This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Remember when James used to do the show? Is today Wednesday?
Yeah, he's missing right now. You want to take Leezy's call?
Yeah. What's up, Leezy? Leezy. Leezy, don't even want to talk. Leezy, like, whatever. What's up, man?
Oh, snap. Wait, can you guys hear me?
He said, yes, oh, snap. What year are we living
Hell,
in?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
What's up?
Hey.
So you got-
What's up?
Oh, my bad.
Did you catch your breath, Leezy? Hey.
Leezy, are you okay? No. Do you need help?
No, I'm calling last minute at the fourth quarter, and that just put me through. Hey, I appreciate you, kinfolk.
We got you.
Hey, D'Lo, so during the break, you know, we were talking about the number 12 pick, and I agree with you guys. You have to have the right people in place to draft the right players. But I was just looking through the list, and we talked about Derek Lively, E.J. Washington, Tyrese Halliburton. There's been a lot of great players that go at 12. So whether the Kings choose to take or not, I think there's a lot of value that could be there at that 12 pick if you look at the last players that's gone at that position. That's all I had.
Okay.
Yeah, you can get a good player.
You waited to say that.
What pick did the Kings have this year?
What do you mean?
What draft pick did they have?
Did they have? Oh, what was Devin Carter? Yeah, it was like 13, was it 13?
Yeah. Could have got good value with that pick too.
Well, and that's what this all boils down to is who's making the
exactly,
pick.
Exactly, that's what I mean.
You got to pick the right person.
Wes said goodbye. So James, do you think Monty McNair is making the pick for the Sacramento Kings this upcoming year? Or draft,
oh,
I should say.
I don't know about that. I think we're a long ways away from knowing what exactly is going to happen here in this offseason. Mm-hmm. We got 10 games still to go. When we get done with those 10 games, we'll have a better gauge on sort of where this team is and maybe, you know, the direction that they want to go forward. I do know just from talking around the league that a lot of the people in the front office and a few of the people in the front office and some of the coaching staff definitely do not think that they will be back next season. And so, you know, this could be the beginning of like quite a dramatic shift and change, you know, both in the front office and with the coaching staff. But we're going to have to wait and see.
Do you think they're related or should be related as far as when I mean the front office and Doug Christie's opportunity of coming back? Like, do you think they should go about it with, you know, a new front office, let him hire the coach, or has Doug done enough, do you believe, to kind of get the interim tag taken off and get the shot.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, I think Doug has done enough, you know, early in his career here to at least be part of the conversation moving forward. I do think that, you know, he's been put in a very, very awkward situation. You know, he talks about it now that he thinks he's coached like three or four different teams here since he took over the reins. And I would agree with him. You know, there's the post Mike Brown era. There's the post De'Aaron Fox era. You know, you start to roll with this new group of players for a few weeks, and then you have injuries to Domantas Sabonis and Malik Monk, and now an illness with Malik Monk. Like, you've coached so many different phases of a season. And, you know, again, I've covered so many of these seasons that go like this, that, you know, it's tough. You know, I remember the, you know, Michael Malone, Ty Corbin, George Karl year, which was three distinct seasons within one. And I'd even say it's probably four seasons within one, where you had this incredible run to start the season with DeMarcus Cousins, and then he got sick. He got viral meningitis. He misses 10 games, and during that 10 games, you know, plotting happened behind the scenes. And before DeMarcus could come back, they fired Michael Malone and set off just a spiral that you know, undid this franchise for a while. So for me, like, this is it's a tough year. There were expectations that haven't been met, but I don't think Doug falls into the expectations that haven't been met. I mean, I guess you could say, hey, you know, we expect more, but, you know, he's still over 500 as a coach of a team that's completely been broken multiple times and not by his own doing. So, yeah, I think we're in for an interesting summer. And, you know, if Doug retains the job, then it's because he's got a lot of people behind the scenes that are pulling for him and believe that he's the right answer here. And it'll take time before we know whether that's, you know, the right thing or not. But I also think, you know, Doug deserves, if he does get the job, he deserves every right to build his own coaching staff, to, you know, to ask for specific types of players to be brought in, and just like everybody else who's come through Sacramento, like, to have the full force of the franchise behind him. And we'll see if that happens or not.
Hey, my bad. Let me ask James real quick to follow up on that. Yeah. James, what would you do in that situation? Would you go with the traditional new front office, let them hire the coach, or would you go new front office but keep Doug?
Yeah, I mean, Kenny, it's one of the most difficult questions because, you know, like, I know Doug very, very well. And I think it's rare that you find somebody who is a leader of men like he is. And, you know, I also think he's been here for a long time trying to support this franchise, whether it's as part of the broadcast team or as an assistant coach and now the head coach. I think I would give him a shot, especially because I know, like, loyalty to a city, loyalty to a franchise is not something you find every day. And if you would have put him in the job and he would have, you know, turned in a, you know, a 10 and 30 something record at this point, yeah, like, you know, I would have told him the same thing. I specifically told him multiple times in the past, you don't want that job, you know, Red Auerbach, you know, Phil Jackson, Greg Popovich couldn't save the Kings from their fate in so many of these seasons. But this one here, it's like, hey, look, you got the job. You did a good job with what you had to work with. There was nothing but chaos. And that's what this franchise, unfortunately, kind of, you know, hangs around in, is they're like really good friends with chaos. And at this point, you know, I don't see why. I mean, there might be more qualified coaches out there. There might be, you know, better basketball coaches, but you don't know that. I mean, Doug could be the guy. You just need to make sure that if you're going to give him this opportunity, that he has all the tools in place. And in all honesty, right now, he does not have all the tools in place. He's down two assistant coaches, not only himself, but Luke Laux. You know, they did not replace him when he was elevated. He also had Leandro Barbosa out for at least a week, maybe two, dealing with some personal issues outside of basketball. And so, like, look, this hasn't been just like a very easy climb. And even the assistants that he did, that he does have, they're not people that he chose. You know, they're Mike Brown's, the remnants of Mike Brown's staff. So, yeah, I think that, you know, given all of the tools that a normal head coach gets and an offseason to prepare and all that stuff, I think he could be a good head coach here, and he probably deserves an opportunity.
How important do you think the postseason in any way, shape, or form is to this equation of whether Doug is back with this team next year?
I mean, I think it could have something to do with it, but at the same time, I'm not really sure that that's fair. You know, like, you put somebody in a pretty untenable situation, and he's done the best to make, you know, lemonade out of the lemons that you gave him. And, like, if you're going to judge him on whether he wins one game or he wins two games in a play-in, or if somehow he makes it through and the Kings get their ass kicked by the Oklahoma City Thunder, which is what's going to happen to any one of these teams that shows up with the 8 seed. Is that really fair? I mean, you didn't build a roster that is ready to go match up against Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the team that we saw roll through Sacramento last
year. Yeah, but you talk about Shai Gilgeous, that's a first-round playoff series. That means you got through the play-in. Like, you fall short of the play-in. How big of a factor is that?
Because that means
the corpse of Dallas made it. And that's tough. Like, that's the one that's hard for me to – that's where I just don't look at Doug. Like, I'm looking at DeMar DeRozan. I'm looking at Zach LaVine. I'm looking at Domantas Sabonis. I need some clarity from Domantas Sabonis if this team falls short to the Dallas Mavericks.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean – I mean, if they don't make the play-in at all, yeah, that probably means you lost out to the Dallas Mavericks. But it could be Phoenix. And if you get beat in a one-game playoff against the Phoenix Suns, I mean – are we all taking crazy pills?
Well, I'm talking about missing the postseason, period. I'm talking about falling to 11.
Okay, yeah, if you fall to 11, again, that's tough. If you fall to 12, because let's not, I mean, tomorrow's game, you lose to the Blazers, you let them right back in the door. And they're right in the mix, too. And, yeah, I think that that wouldn't be good, for sure. But, you know, like, look, there's so much that's gone on in this season. And if we look at, like, the schedule that they just went through, like, what more do we expect more than, like, 2-5? We expected, or 2-6, right? 2-4 over the 6-game homestand.
So far, yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, I think when they won the first two, like, it was like, okay, they could win 4. They might even be able to win 5. But reality set in, and when you lost to the Bulls, it set in motion what was probably always going to happen. You know, there's a good chance this team was going to lose all three of the games against the Bucks and the Thunder and the Celtics. So, I mean, I don't think that there's been a whole lot of surprises here over the last 2 weeks. And you would like to see them respond here in the final 10 games. The final 10 games, you know, I don't think they can go 8-2. But can they go 7-3? Can they go 6-4? Yeah. I mean, it's there for the taking. So maybe that this 10 games here could have a lot to say about what you do with Doug or what you do at the front office. But I don't know. Like, this is a jumbled up, crazy season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's almost like a survivor pool. We'll have to see how, you know, who does survive the mess. Because that's what it's been. It's been a really, really weird and disappointing season from almost start to finish.
I wanted to ask a question, but I don't know if I want to go down that road. We'll go down that road. How did we get here? Like, when did all this start, in your opinion? Did it start when, and I don't know the procedure, I'm not trying to put it at the feet of anybody, but did Mike Brown ask/demand for a contract extension, and that's when all this stuff started to unravel because they paused on that, and that just Like, when did all of this start?
I mean, it probably started at the end of last season when they didn't have the same success they did the year before. You know, it probably started at the trade deadline last year. But I think, you know, this is like momentum that gathered. It's not like, I don't think there was one event that put us in the situation that we're in. Because, like, look, whether there were people that wanted Mike and people who didn't want Mike to get an extension last summer, it doesn't matter because the Kings did give him an extension. And there was enough momentum within the building to give him that extension. And to be honest, like, you had two choices. You could have fired him or you could have given him an extension. No NBA head coach that I can remember really goes into a lame duck season. And you know, that's just not something that happens in the league. I mean, the Kings, it's usually you sign a 4-year deal and you work two. But with Mike, this is one of those situations where, you know, that was a mutual option that the Kings and Mike Brown had for his fourth season that was coming up. And Mike opted out because the landscape changed in the NBA and everybody got paid more. So, I mean, we can say that it started there. You can say it probably started too on draft night when they didn't make a trade. It snowballed a little bit when they had a couple other trades lined up that didn't go through. And then they put themselves in a situation where they made the DeMar DeRozan trade, the sign-in trade for DeRozan that hard capped the team. So there's all of these little phases that happen. And, you know, like DeMar DeRozan, don't like DeMar DeRozan, that's a really pivotal moment too. You brought in a player who, you know, at this point in the season, I think we can, like, whether you love him or not, you can see that he's probably not a perfect fit for this roster or for the future of this roster either. And so there's all of these little pieces that happen. And what it did is it led to the firing of a coach, the trading of your star player. A lot of things happened here that, you know, like, again, the story of this season is like, if you're writing a book, it'd be 5 chapters. It's not just a cut and dry, you know, 2024-25 season. The Kings finished, you know, 41-41. That's not what this season has felt like.
Maybe the problem isn't DeMar's fit with the roster. Maybe the problem is the goddamn roster. Like, well, what here in Sac, like, who are we holding on to? Like, who are we looking at? Like, man, this thing hasn't worked because of DeMar DeRozan. Like, what player? What one guy? Or multiple guys? Like, I don't think there's any. I don't think the roster is built well. And maybe DeMar is a part of that, but I'm saying, like, the idea that DeMar doesn't fit the roster, I don't think the roster fits, period.
No, I would agree with you. They were in need of something different, you know, to open this season. I just, you know, like, we do all kinds of analogies, but, like, when you're cooking, there's sometimes where you put something into a recipe and you know right away, like, oh, that's not it. That didn't work. And, you know, it took a little while to realize that, but it's just a different style of player. And I don't think they're, again, I think DeMar DeRozan's a tremendous basketball player. It's just the style of play doesn't fit. You know, when, just for example, the other night, not last night's game, but the game before against Boston, right? Doug Christie wanted 53 point shots. Like, and the real number is like 40, 45, but, you know, he's pushing for 50. And they end up with 23 point shots. And part of the reason why you ended up with 24 3-point shots is because one player shot 28% of your shots. And of his shots, he only took 4 3-point shots out of the 24. And again, that's not his game to take a bunch of 3-point shots. But it's still, if the call to action is to shoot of your 84 shots or 86 shot attempts, is to shoot 40 plus threes, and one guy who takes 24 of those shots only takes 4, the rest of the team has to take like an obscene amount of threes percentage wise in order to get to that number. And again, I don't think it's, you know, just straight up that DeMar is just a bad basketball player or anything. It's just like he's not the style of player that this team plays. And so, again, like, is DeMar the only player that maybe needs to go from this roster? Absolutely not. There's plenty of players. And there are plenty of players. There are a couple of players that already left that no longer fit this roster, whether it's Kevin Huerter or, you know, some of the other guys that just aren't here anymore. You know, that, like, you have to evolve as a team. And the evolution of this specific season did not go as planned.
I wanted to just follow up on something, because I guess just hearing the breakdown and thinking about, like, where all this started, I asked the question, where did all this start? And the way James laid it out, perfect. But I think it does start with, and not blaming him, I'm just talking about the situation, the Mike Brown contract extension. That was the first time in 18 months we saw dysfunction from this team. When it was like, yo, you're not going to re-sign him? Like, what's going on? That was the first time we saw, publicly at least, it was like, yo, this thing isn't as great as maybe we thought it was. I understand the unwritten rules of the NBA and basketball and contracts and stuff like that. But what would have happened if they just said, no, we're not extending your contract? We want you here as our coach. We're not extending. What, is Mike Brown going to quit? Like, I think it's hindsight, it's 2020. That's probably what should have happened. You probably should have said, Mike, we're not comfortable giving you a contract extension. Mm-hmm. We want you here. I understand the whole lame duck thing and all this other stuff, but we don't want to do that right now. What do you want to do, Mike? Like I said, is Mike going to quit?
Well, I'll tell you that, like, dysfunction had started well before that. Like, I mean, we got to late December last year, and Harrison Barnes, like, told the media relations department that he would no longer come out and talk to the media until after the trade deadline, because he had heard his name mentioned so many times already that he was like, I'm good. I don't need to go out there and represent if I might not be here in 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever that date is. And so, like, that's part of dysfunction. I would say, like, look, if you were going to bring back Mike Brown and they made the decision to do it, if you would have left him as, like, a lame duck, it would have got really awkward during the season, and it would have made it even easier for the Kings to fire him earlier, which, you know, again, probably would have happened in the first couple of games of the season. It probably would not have waited until, you know, we got to 30-something games in, whatever it was. But I also think, like, these are all avoidable things. Like, Mike Brown is still a very good NBA head coach, and, like, the way to avoid getting to this point is to continuously build the roster and improve the roster and try to make, you know, like, try to compete with teams around the league. Like, there's a reason why you go into a game against Boston or OKC and know, like, right away that you're going to have a difficult time competing. And that's after the Kings added Valanciunas. Mm-hmm. It's after they added Jake LaRavia. It's after they added, you know, Zach LaVine. You know, the size and athleticism of this team has never been on par with some of the other teams. We rewind 2 years ago, the Kings were a team.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the rise, and we're well ahead of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here we are 2 years later, and the Kings are on the decline, and Oklahoma City Thunder are now a team that's primed to not just compete for a championship, but potentially win multiple championships. And that's where you have to look and say, hey, look, some teams took the necessary steps to continue to get better, to maintain and improve, and some teams didn't. And that's just, it's a reality of what happened here. And I don't know what went into the decision to, you know, bring in the players that they did this last offseason. But, like, there were calculated mistakes that happened and, you know, bringing in Devin Carter, who couldn't play for 6 months, it's a problem. You know, like, if your big acquisitions are to lose Harrison Barnes and bring in DeMar DeRozan, and then to bring in a rookie that's not going to be able to play, that you didn't do like a ton during the offseason to make this group better. I mean, even if you look at the Doug McDermott and Jay Crowder things, those happened at, like, one of them got signed like the day before the season started, and the other one got signed like 2 weeks into the season. Like, where was the forethought? Where was building this team out in advance? And again, sometimes you swing and you miss. Sometimes you're waiting for that one perfect deal. But at the same time, like, there were opportunities here, or there should have been opportunities to improve this roster well before we got to the start of the season, where maybe it's possible that, you know, Mike Brown would be here for the entire 3-year extension that you signed him to. But just none of that happened.
All right, we got more with James Hamm, our insider from the insiders. We'll do that when KC return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Well, that was a little kick to the face to hear how well the Pacers are playing. My goodness.
It's cooking.
Pacers-Lakers coming up following D'Lo and KC here. We'll have tons of NBA action on this station as we get closer and closer to the playoffs. The discussion regarding Mike Brown did not end during the commercial break. The discussion regarding the coaching position did not end during the commercial break. Hammer, one thing I pointed out earlier, and I believe this to be 100% accurate, I think when Mike Brown took this job several years ago, this was a very appealing job. You know, we were coming off of Puke Guy and Luke Walton was gone, but you had Domas, you had De'Aaron. You felt like the world was kind of in front of you. You saw a direction for the first time in a very long time in this franchise. You saw a direction. And I thought Mike Brown was a terrific hire at the time. And now, James, just a couple of short years later, I am, you know, we could talk about whether Doug Christie deserves to be the coach, or we could have that conversation all we want. My belief is this job is no longer appealing.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, but I also, a couple of things. Number one, I don't think this is a teardown. And also, just in all honesty, like, I don't even know if there's a way to tear this down. Like, again, I just don't know. I don't, what would that even look like? I don't know that you can purge the roster of whatever. I think you're committed to at least a good portion of this roster for the next 2 years, like, at a minimum. Let's see, did I freeze?
Oh, yeah.
I'm back. There we go.
Gotcha.
Hey, there we go. Yeah, so I don't know if, you know, this is a complete teardown or not. Like, I would not take it that way. Like, if I were someone who's looking at this as, like, as a potential general manager, like, I would take this job. I mean, you've got draft picks, future draft picks. You've got a couple of movable pieces. You've got some pieces that you can't move. But at the same time, like, the pieces that you can't move, it's okay. They're still starter quality. You know, and I think the only player you can't really move on this roster, and again, this isn't being disrespectful, it's just when you have a player who's 30 years old and has $46 million and $49 million over the next 2 years, it's really difficult to move that contract in Zach LaVine's. But at the same time, if I have Zach LaVine as a player, I think you can build a roster around Domantas Sabonis, Keegan Murray, Keon Ellis, Zach LaVine roster, like, as a core. Like, why not? Zach LaVine is still a very, very high-end talent. What you need to do is you need to support him the right way. You need to add the pieces that make sense. If you're going to roll Zach LaVine out there for 36 to 37 minutes tonight, and that means you got to go get like three more Jake LaRavias or two more Keegan Murrays. You got to go get more of those guys that can disguise some of the problems that you have. I also think, you know, again, Malik Monk can be a part of the continued build of this team, but you're going to have to be aggressive and it's not going to feel good. And you're going to have to give up future draft capital to make some of the moves that you need to make. And it's just a really tough situation. You know, I think, you know, adding more complexity to this entire discussion is we just saw the assistant general manager walk out the door, and whether he heard you know, the bell ringing that he was next or not. You know, it still shows you that, like, there's a reason why he left and why he took a college job as opposed to an assistant general manager job in Sacramento. You know, especially like we've heard in the past that the potential for Monty McNair to be let go and for Wes Wilcox to elevate. Clearly, that wasn't in the cards at all for this offseason. So if we're looking at, you know, sort of the instability of this thing and how, but I think that there are people that could come in and fix this and make it a winning situation. Again, you're just a year removed from 46 wins and 2 years removed from 48. You do still have pieces, but you have to, you know, you're going to have to extend yourself. And you're going to have to be aggressive and take some risks in order to get there. And it's just not going to be like a cut and dry, easy situation to take on. As far as a head coach, yeah, I mean, like, look, it's one of 30 jobs. There's always a head coach that would be willing to take this job or an assistant who's looking for his first job. I don't think that this is a, like, a career ender job. Like, I think you can look at this and say, hey, look, if I have the right support, if the right pieces are acquired, if we make the right moves in the offseason, I can get this thing on the right track very quickly and go from zero to hero. And so, you know, again, to have Doug step in and not let this team, you know, completely let go the rope and just have like a, you know, again, a 15-35 finish to the season over the last 50 games, that's, it's a good thing. This thing is still intact. It hasn't been like we talk about whether they make the play-in or not. They are still in that conversation. They're not just like a team that's completely out of it and just horrible. And I can't believe this whole season is so incredibly bad. It's not a good season, but there is still some positivity coming out of this and something you can work with if you're trying to continue the build. It's really weird that you go from being a team that's super on the rise to a team that's tumbling down a hill pretty quickly, and you need somebody to catch you and put you back up on the right trajectory.
By the way, I'm okay with this because I ain't really for tearing nobody down. Mm-hmm. But I do want to point out, we did let Domas skate today. It's cool.
Oh, I'm aware.
I'm good with it.
To be clear, okay, I brought his name up earlier.
I know. We got on another tangent.
Yep.
Let him skate today, and it's cool. I'm okay with that. I don't know if that same grace will be shown for others.
You're right. I did show Domas a little grace today because I can't believe he played. Mm-hmm. I can't believe he's playing, and he played on the second night of a back-to-back. I don't care. Like, being 3-12, not my favorite. All right, at least you shot 12 times. Mm. You only shot 10 the other day. Yeah. You got to put a gun to Domas's head to get him to shoot the ball, James.
Okay, so last night specifically, I'll just look at the last two games. I thought if you look at the Boston game, it just reminded you of how good Domas was. He kept grabbing rebounds, taking off out of the break, and running up the court. And I kept thinking to myself, how is he doing that with an ankle that like no one thought he would be ready to play, at least not until after this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so much faster and had so much more energy than the rest of the team. It was crazy. You get to last night's game and the dude had no legs, and I still thought he battled. I mean, that team, that the Thunder, it's almost like they have a force field around the key. It was just crazy. There's a reason why the Kings, you know, took 40-something threes, 48 threes. It's because they couldn't get through anywhere. And, you know, we watched Valanciunas go inside and tried to score on Chet Holmgren and Hartenstein. They just, like, put a lid on him. And I thought, yeah, could Domas have hit one of his 4 3-pointers? Maybe. But that's where you saw that the dude had no legs at all. You know, the rebounding numbers, he finished with 12 rebounds. I may not have had that in Daily Fantasy Sports. I needed one more rebound in order to win money.
But
yeah, especially you saw that he got stuck on 12, and it was I was sitting next to Mac George. He said, "Oh, oh, I think you're going to get that 12. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to get that 12. And then he comes out of the game with 3 minutes left and the game's over and the, you know, with 12.
Now James has got to sell one of the boats.
But you're still, you're watching him play and you're like, okay, like the assists, everything else is good except for the fact that he wasn't able to score inside. And again, playing on the second night of the back-to-back, what did he play last night? 38 minutes?
38 minutes.
Yep.
38 minutes on the second night of a back-to-back with a, I'm just going to say a grade two ankle sprain. I mean, after six, 7 days after the initial injury, that to me is remarkable. And I will continue to say I would build around that guy. Straight up. I would build around that guy.
As what, though? As your one?
No, no. Okay. As my number two or my number three that is the distributor, like, I think you can still build around him. I think you can build a team around him and Zach LaVine and again, Malik Monk, maybe off the bench, and Keegan Murray, and I think you can build around that team. But you have to put the right pieces in place. Again, this isn't – it's not a dig on DeMar DeRozan. But if Domantas Sabonis is going to be your hub, you have to surround him with three-point shooters that space the floor. You have to add him. You have to surround him with the length and athleticism that makes sense. Even De'Aaron Fox is not a perfect fit with Domantas Sabonis. And you can say, well, how many players are? And the answer is there are so many players that are a good fit with Domantas Sabonis in the league. You just have to go out and, you know, again, role players will fit along Domantas Sabonis. Sabonis. So, like, I don't know how you could not find the right pieces to put around him.
Well, okay. I don't know. I was 100% on board with you, James. I'm not sure that I agree with that anymore. I just find myself getting increasingly frustrated with him. That's all I can say. I just
do you think that a little bit of it has to do, because I mean, the guy's tough as nails. I love that
absolutely
about him.
No question about that.
I love that about Domas. I love what he brings, like his IQ, the passing, the rebounding, all that. Like, I love all that. But do you think he is a victim a little bit of what we talked about earlier, where that is cute when you're making $20 million a year? If I'm paying you $40 million a year, I'm going to need more than your basketball IQ.
Not for me. Okay. It's I wanted him to be like a cornerstone. And I just sometimes I don't know if he is. And maybe it's the absence of De'Aaron. Maybe it's the absence of another one or 1A or two or like whatever. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's not being the perfect fit with DeMar or Zach LaVine. Like, I'm not sure what it is, but it's sometimes I just look at like the other day, like, you shot the ball 10 times and you were really efficient. Okay. Shoot at 20. But a lot of what people are upset about Zach LaVine, like, oh, Zach LaVine needs the perfect shot. He's not going to take a bad shot. He needs everything to be perfect. I feel like the same is true for Domantas Sabonis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, look, not every player has to score 20 something a game. Like,
on this goddamn team, you do.
Well, it shouldn't have been that way.
But I don't disagree. And that was my point, James. I don't disagree with that, but that's where we are. And maybe that's not fair to Domas.
But all right. He's paying $40 million a year to average 15 points a night. And 15, like, we talking about.
I think
about,
he was averaging 19.
No, he was at one point, but we're like, we need people around him so he's, you know, doesn't have to score so much and all this other stuff, which I get it, but man, like, that's, I don't know. How many 40 plus million people a year need three other better scorers around them?
Okay, so. Domantas Sabonis right now, and he's had a rough, I don't know how, what, month, right? He's averaging 18.9. He leads the league in rebounds again for the third straight season, and he's averaging 6.2 assists per game. He was All-NBA third team last year, All-NBA third team the year before. He's one of the, if, like, All-NBA is the top 15 players in the league. First team is the top five, second team is the second five, Third team is the third five. He's a top 15 player. Top 15 players, I don't care what they average points per game, deserve $40 million a year in a league that pays players routinely $40 million a year. Like, this is not, I don't understand, because he doesn't average 23 points a game or 25 points a game, that he doesn't deserve All-NBA, or that he doesn't deserve $40 million a year.
I'm not saying he gets whatever they pay him. I'm not saying that. But go through those 15, and those he might be the only one that isn't scoring like that, and that isn't a guy that is a hub of somebody off. He's probably the only one of those 15 that aren't a number one or two option on their team. And it would be all good if he was the third or fourth option if they weren't 10th. Like, if they were sixth and he was the third or fourth option, it's all good, man. Like, he does so many other things. But that's not working. And I'm not saying that's his fault, but I'm just saying, go through the other 15. Tell me how many of them are the fourth option on that team.
Well, I can tell you that none of the other top 15 lead the league in rebounding the last 3 years.
He's a great rebounder.
And like, look, the fact is, second, third option on a really good team. I mean, he was the second option on a 48-win team that was third in the Western Conference. You know, I think he's proven like who he is and what he can be. And the fact is that if you can't put the right players around him, which are super simple, which every team, other team in the league is able to go out and find, then I don't know. I mean, again, like the way that the team last night that they played, that the Oklahoma City Thunder has built their team, is to get long athletic defenders who can shoot the three ball. Everybody on that team shoots the three. They space the floor. The night before, you face the Boston Celtics, who averaged 50 threes again or a game, or 49 threes again a game. All of them play defense. All of them are long and athletic, except for Peyton Pritchard, who, you know, again, averages 8 three-point attempts per game. You go to the Cleveland Cavaliers, the team with the best record in the NBA. Every single player they have is long and athletic and shoots a three. It's not hard to find long athletic players to put around Domantas Sabonis. The Kings just haven't done it. They haven't found the guys to do it. And so, like, do I think Domantas Sabonis is a legit number one scoring option? I will never say that. But that doesn't mean he can't be, whether he's a first scoring option or second or third, if he's your second best player, you can be an extremely good team who wins 48 games and is a third seed in the Western Conference. We know that because he did it. So that's where I'm at with him. Like, I get it. I look at every team in the league that just like finds these guys everywhere. And instead of finding that guy with the 13th pick in the NBA draft, you went with an undersized combo guard who is going to be out for 6 months. Like, you didn't even give yourself an opportunity with a Dalton Connect or with De Silva, or name that wing of Ryan Dunn. Like, there are all kinds of guys that you could have looked at, or you could have traded for one or two of those guys. You just didn't do it. Like, and when you did do it, you waited until midseason, and it's a guy in Jake LaRavia who's, you know, played 120 games in his career and missed most of the first 2 years of his career. You know, you got a guy, but you used a second round pick to get him. You didn't go get a Cam Johnson. You didn't go get these other players that make sense to put around Sabonis. And so at a certain point, like, you can't just keep, you know, you have the puzzle pieces laid out. You know what you need to get better, and you didn't do it.
James, we're just going to be fighting for the next, I don't know how many weeks. And if the Kings don't get to the postseason or compete in the play-in, I don't know. Like, we're turning on each other. The Chatty House is fighting with KC. KC threw poor Nick V out of here earlier. The Chatty House is fighting amongst each other. I'm just here. James is sick of Kenny. Everybody's just agitated with each other. All because the Sacramento Kings haven't won enough games. And Jesse's the angriest Kings fan of all of them.
It's true.
I love it. What's he got to be angry about?
James,
I
care.
You could spare two or three long, athletic, three-point shooting, defensive-minded wings. Come on, Jesse.
I've been seeing Peyton Pritchard for the Kings, point guard.
Yeah, that Peyton Pritchard pretty good.
Still got years on the deal, though.
Been pretty damn good.
Well, good news, Kings fans. We're going to get out of here, and you can go listen to two good basketball teams.
Yay.
I thought you were going to say only 10 games left.
Well, James, real quick, what's the number you think the Kings have to win to make the postseason? They got 10 games left. What do you think the record is?
They got to go 6-4.
That's it. Jesse and I, KC said 6-4. I thought 6-4 solidifies it no matter who they beat. Jesse and I said 5-5 can do it as long as you win the last game of the year against Phoenix. Either way, we'll close out the homestand tomorrow against Portland, and we'll be here to talk about it beginning at 10 a.m. with James and Kyle and the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Celtics.